Chapter 15. Choose Your Coffin. Whenever Tedros was stressed, he worked out. So to see him sweating at 6 a.m. in the groom room, throwing hammers, pumping dumbbells, and swimming laps, meant he had a lot on his mind. It was understandable. The snowball invitations had been slipped under doors during the night. As he scaled climbing ropes made of braided blonde hair, he cursed the fact he would spend Christmas at a ball. Why did everything with Evers revolve around oppressive formal dances? The problem with balls was that boys had to do all the work. Girls could flirt and scheme and wish all they wanted, but in the end, it's the boy who had to make his choice and hope she said yes. Tedros wasn't worried about the girl saying yes. He was worried there was no girl he wanted to ask at all. He couldn't remember the last time he actually liked a girl. And yet, he always had one following him, claiming to be his girlfriend. It happened every time. He vowed to forget girls, then noticed one getting attention, set out to prove he could get her, got her, and discovered she was a fatuous prince hunter who had had her eye on him all along. The Beatrix curse. No. There was a better name for it. The Guinevere curse. Tedros was only 9 when his mother, Guinevere, made off with the knight Lancelot, leaving him and his father alone. He heard the whispers that followed. She found love. But what about all those times she said, "I love you," to his father? All the times she said it to him? Which love was real? Night after night, Tedros watched his father slip further into heartbreak and drunkenness. Death came within the year. With his last breaths, King Arthur gripped his son's hands.
"The people will need a queen, Tedros. Don't make my mistakes. Look for the girl who is truly good."
Tedros climbed higher and higher on the golden braids, veins straining against muscle. "Don't make my mistakes." His hand slipped, and he fell off the rope, crashing to a soft mat. Cheeks red, he glowered at the taunting waterfalls of hair. All the girls here were mistakes, Guinevere's who confused love with kisses. Daylight flecked across Agatha's pillow. She stirred and saw Sophie hunched on Rena's old bed. "Why are you still here? If the wolves catch you, it's the doom room again. Besides, you should be home writing that anonymous love poem to Tedra. You didn't tell me there's a ball." Sophie held up a glittering snowflake invitation, Agatha's name in pearls.
"Oh, who cares about a stupid ball?" Agatha groaned. "We'll be long gone. Now, make sure that poem talks about who he is as a person, his honor, his valor, his courage."
Sophie was smelling the invitation now.
"Sophie, listen to me. The closer we get to the ball, the more Tedros looks for a date. The more he looks for a date, the more he falls in love with someone else. The more he falls in love with someone else, the more he leaves us here to die. Got it?"
"But I want to be his date."
"You're not invited."
Sophie pursed her lips.
"Sophie, Tedros has to kiss you now. Otherwise we'll never get home."
"Honestly, do they even check invitations at a ball?"
Agatha snatched the invitation.
"Stupid me, I thought you wanted to stay alive."
"But I can't miss the ball."
Agatha shoved her towards the door.
"Use the tunnel of trees, marble hall, glittering gowns, waltzing under stars.
If a wolf catches you, just say you're lost.
A ball, Aggie. A real ball."
Agatha kicked her out. Sophie scowled back.
"My roommates will help me. They're true friends."
She slammed the door on Agatha's shocked expression. 10 minutes later, Hester stamped her foot, nearly killing Anadil's rat.
"Help!" You want me to help a never kiss an ever? I'd rather stick my head up a horse's...
Sophie, no villain ever finds love,
Anadil said, hoping reason might save her rats.
To even look for it is to betray your own soul.
You want me to go home? Sophie snapped, picking away tunnel leaves. Then put a hex on Tedros so he asks me to the ball.
The ball? Hester screeched. How do you even know about the ball?
A villain at a ball, said Dot.
A villain waltzing, said Anadil.
A villain curtsying, said Hester,
and all three collapsed into howls. I'm going to that ball, Sophie fumed.
Presenting the Witch of Woods Beyond, Hester cackled through tears.
By lunch, she wasn't laughing. First, Sophie was 20 minutes late to class after trying to find a solution to her jagged hair. She disguised it with berets, bows, combs, before settling on a daisy wreath. Not hideous, she sighed before she walked into uglification and saw students' hair turned grey from batwing potions. A one suddenly exploded over her head.
Hideous, Professor Manley beamed, ogling her hair. Your greatest beauty, gone.
Sophie sobbed as she left class, but then heard Hester scream. In the hall, Albemarle, a studious, spectacled woodpecker, was chipping Sophie's name just below hers on the evil rankings board. One little love spell, Hester, Sophie reminded sweetly, and then I'm gone forever. Hester stomped away, reminding herself that nevers kissing evers couldn't be encouraged, no matter how extreme the circumstances. At the start of curses, Lady Lesso swept into the ice chamber, jaw tighter than usual.
Impossible to find good torturers these days, she muttered.
What is she talking about? Sophie whispered to Dot. Beast went missing, Dot whispered back. Behind her, Sophie looked nauseous. Testing the class on Nemesis Dreams, Lady Lesso seethed and sniped at every wrong answer.
But I thought a Nemesis Dream meant you'll be a lead villain, Hester said. No, you imbecile! Only if you have symptoms. A Nemesis Dream is nothing without symptoms, Lady Lesso retorted. Dot, what do you taste in your mouth during your first Nemesis Dream?
What you ate before bed?
Blood, you idiot!
Lady Lesso dragged nails across the ice wall.
Oh, what I'd give to see a real villain in this school, a real villain, who could make good weep instead of these dung fleas.
When it came to her turn, Sophie expected the worst abuse. Only to have Lady Lesso give her a wart for a surely incorrect answer, and caress her shorn hair as she passed.
Why is she being nice to you?
Hester hissed behind her. Sophie had the same question, but turned around with a smile. Because I'm future class captain, as long as I stay here, that is. Hester looked like she might break Sophie's neck.
Love spells are junk villainy. They don't work.
I'm sure you'll find one that does, Sophie said.
I'm warning you, Sophie. This will end badly.
What about petunias in every room? Sophie mused. I think it'll be my first proposal as class captain.
That night, Hester wrote to her relatives for love spells. It's contagious, Agatha moaned as Evergirls bounded around the clearing, showing each other their invitations, each snowflake a different shape. Nearby, Tedros shot marbles and ignored them entirely. Every challenge had to do with ball beauty, ball etiquette, ball entrances, ball history. Sophie wasn't listening. Pail of pig's feet in hand, she gazed longingly at the Evergirls.
No, Agatha said.
But what if he asks me?
Sophie, he needs to kiss you now, not take you to some stupid ball.
Oh, Agatha, don't you know your fairy tales? If he takes me to the ball, then he'll kiss me. Like Cinderella at midnight, kisses always happen at the ball. And by then, my hair will have grown and I'll have fixed my shoes and... Oh, no, the gown. Can you steal some charmeuse from one of the girls? Some crepe de chine, too, and tulle, mountains of tulle. Preferably in pink, but I can always dye it, though tulle never looks quite right dyed. Perhaps we should go with chiffon, then. Much more manageable.
Agatha blinked, speechless.
You're right. I should ask him first, Sophie said, leaping up. No frowns, darling. It'll be easy as pie. You'll see. Princess Sophie at a ball. What are you... You'll ruin everything!
But Sophie had already flounced to the Evers' side, plopped next to Tedros, and held out her pail.
Hello, handsome. Want some of my... feet?
Tedros misfired his marble into Chaddock's eye. The entire clearing went silent. He turned to her. Your girlfriend's calling. Sophie followed his eyes to Agatha, waving her off.
She's just upset, Sophie sighed. You were right, Tedros. She and I are too close. That's why I left in the middle of class yesterday, to tell her it's time I make good friends now.
Dot said you left because you were sick.
Sophie coughed.
Oh, well, I had a bit of a cold.
She said it was diarrhea.
Sophie swallowed.
You know Dot, always making things up.
She doesn't seem like a liar to me.
Oh, she's always lying, just to get attention, since she's...
You know.
Tedros raised his eyebrows.
Since she's...
Fat.
I see.
Tedros lined up his marble.
Funny, isn't it? She crawled into empty graves to eat enough worms for the two of you, just so you wouldn't fail. Said you're her best friend.
Did she?
Sophie saw Dot waving at her.
How depressing.
She turned to Tedros, who was preparing to shoot.
Do you remember when we first met, Tedros? It was in the Blue Forest. Nothing that happened after matters. Not you punching me, or calling me a never, or you landing in poo. What matters is what you felt at first sight. You wanted to rescue me, Tedros. And here I am.
She folded her hands.
Whenever you're ready, then.
Tedros looked up at her.
What?
To ask me to the ball,
Sophie said, smiling. The prince's face didn't change.
I know it's a bit early, but a girl does have to plan,
Sophie pressed. Beatrix shoved in.
No room for nevers.
What? There's plenty of room,
Sophie huffed. But Rena jostled her, then six other girls, and Sophie was pushed out of the circle entirely. She whirled to Tedros to defend her.
Can you go away? He said, eyes on his marble. You're blocking my view.
Agatha smirked as Sophie stomped towards her.
Easy as pie, hmm?
Sophie blew past her.
Humble pie,
Agatha shouted.
It's the hair,
Sophie sobbed.
It's not the hair, Agatha said as they trudged through the Blue Forest gates. You need to make him like you first. Otherwise we'll never get home.
It's supposed to be love at first sight. That's how fairy tales work.
Time for plan B.
Then again, he didn't say no,
Sophie said hopefully.
Perhaps it didn't go so badly.
Dot rushed up.
Everyone's saying you called Tedros a liar, threw poo in his face, and licked his feet.
Sophie turned to Agatha.
What's plan B?
They arrived with the rest of their forest group to find 8 glass coffins nestled in turquoise grass.
Each week we'll repeat the challenge to discern good from evil, since it is the most crucial skill you will take into the woods,
Uber announced.
Today, we'll test the Evers. Given the fascination with yesterday's burials, I thought we'd give you a taste of your own.
With that, he made Evergirls and Nevergirls climb into the open coffins and, with a swish of his staff, turned all eight into identical dark-haired princesses with big hips, round backsides and trouty lips.
"I'm obese!" Sophie gasped.
"Look, this is your chance," Agatha said, remembering Princess Uma's words. "If Tedros is your greatest wish, he'll be pulled towards you. He'll know you're his true love."
"But Beatrix will wish for him too."
"You have to wish harder. Focus on what you love about him. Focus on what makes him yours." Yuba slammed the glass lids on both girls and jumbled the eight coffins.
"Now, study the maidens carefully and search for signs of good," he said to the boys. "Once you're sure you've found an Ever, kiss her hand and her true nature will be revealed."
The Ever boys warily ventured towards the coffins.
"We want to play too."
Yuba turned to Hort and the Never boys, chomping at the bit.
"I suppose it'll give our girls incentive to behave," said the gnome.
Inside the coffins, eight plump princesses stiffened as both good and evil boys wandered around them. Hort snuck to a blue mint bush, stepped over a snacking skunk, and tore off a few leaves. He saw Ruvan staring.
"What? I like being fresh," said Hort, munching mint. "Hurry up and make your choices,"
Yuba barked. In her coffin, Agatha wished Tedros would look deep into Sophie's heart and see who she truly was. In her coffin, Sophie closed her eyes and thought of everything she loved about her prince. Tedros, meanwhile, didn't want any of these girls. But just as he was about to bag the challenge, he felt his eyes drawn to the third coffin. Something pulled him towards its maiden, even though she looked just like all the rest. A warmth, a glow, a spark of energy pulsing between them. Yes, something was there. Something he hadn't noticed before. One of these girls was more than what she seemed.
"Time's up," Yuba said.
Agatha heard a blood-curdling shriek and spun to Sophie, back in her body, lips scrunched against Hort's. Hort released her.
"Oh, the hand. Oops."
He popped another mint leaf.
"Should we start again?"
"You ape!"
Sophie kicked him, and he crashed into the mint bush, onto the snacking skunk, which raised its tail and sprayed him in the eyes. Hort staggered around, ramming into coffins.
"I'm blind! I'm blind!"
Until he smashed into Sophie's again, which slammed shut, sealing his skunked body in with hers. Aghast, Sophie rammed the glass, but it wouldn't budge.
"Rule number 5, nevers, don't trifle with love,"
Yuba crabbed.
"Fitting punishment. Now come, boys, let's see who you've picked."
Agatha heard her own coffin open. She turned and saw Tedros lift her thick hand towards his tender lips. Stunned, Agatha kneed him in the chest. Tedros fell back, bashed his head on the coffin top, and slumped to the ground. Ever boys crowded around him, and princess clones jumped from their coffins to help, while Yuba conjured a block of ice for the prince's skull. In the chaos, Agatha slipped out of her coffin and into the one next to it. Tedros staggered up with no intention of letting his princess go. Yuba grimaced.
"Perhaps you should sit down."
"I want to finish."
With a sigh, Yuba nodded at the clones, who climbed back into the coffins and closed their eyes. Tedros remembered it was the third coffin. He lifted the jeweled glass over its maiden and kissed her hand with confidence. The princess melted into Beatrix, smiling imperiously. Tedros dropped her hand like a hot stone. In the next coffin, Agatha sighed with relief. The wolves howled in the distance. As the class followed Yuba back to school, Agatha stayed behind with Sophie.
"Come, Agatha,"
Yuba called.
"This is Sophie's lesson to learn."
Agatha glanced back to see Sophie sealed in with Hort, holding her nose as she screamed and kicked the glass. Maybe the gnome was right. Tomorrow, her friend would be ready to listen. "She'll survive," she muttered, following the others. "It's only Hort." But Hort wasn't the problem. The problem was that Sophie had seen Agatha switch coffins. Chapter 16. Cupid Goes Rogue. Shielding herself from a morning storm, Agatha accosted Hester in the Nevers lunch line. "Where's Sophie?"
"Won't come out of the room, missed all our classes," Hester said as a wolf dumped mystery meat into her pail. "Apparently sharing a coffin with Hort robs you of your will to live."
When Agatha made it to Puddled Halfway Bridge, her reflection was waiting for her, more glum and gaunt than the last time. "I need to see Sophie," Agatha said, avoiding eye contact with herself.
"That's the second time he's looked at you that way."
"Huh? Second time who looked at me?"
"Tedros."
"Well, Sophie won't listen to me."
"Well, maybe Sophie isn't Tedros's true love then."
"She has to be," Agatha said, suddenly worried. "It can't be someone else. That's how we're getting back home. Who else could it be? Beatrix? Rena?
You."
Agatha looked up. Her reflection smiled hideously. Agatha's eyes veered back to her wet clumps.
"That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. First off, love is something storybooks invented to keep girls busy. Second, I hate Tedros. Third, he thinks I'm an evil witch, which, given my recent behavior, might be true. Now, let me through."
Her reflection stopped smiling.
"You think we're a witch?"
Agatha glowered at herself.
"We're making our friend win her true love just so that we can take her away from him."
Her reflection instantly turned uglier.
"Definitely evil," it said, and vanished.
The door to room 66 was unlocked. Agatha found Sophie curled under her scorched, tattered covers.
"I saw it," Sophie hissed. "I saw him pick you. Here I'm worried about Beatrix when you're the double-crossing, backstabbing fink."
"Look, I don't know why Tedros keeps choosing me," Agatha said, squeezing rain from her hair. Sophie's eyes drilled into her.
"I want him to choose you, you fool," Agatha yelled. "I want us to go home."
Sophie searched her face for a long moment. With a sigh, she turned to the window.
"You don't know what it was like. I still smell him everywhere. He's in my nose, Agatha. They've given him his own room until the stench goes away. But who's to say where Skunk ends and Hort begins?"
Shuddering, Sophie turned back.
"I did everything you said, Aggie. I focused on all the things I love about Tedros. His skin, his eyes, his cheekbones."
"Sophie, that's his looks. Tedros won't feel a connection if you just like him because he's handsome. How is that different from every other girl?"
Sophie frowned.
"I didn't want to think about his crown or his fortune. That's shallow."
"Think about who he is, his personality, his values, what he's like deep down."
"Excuse me? I know how to make a boy love me," Sophie huffed, shooing her out. "Just stop ruining things and let me do things my way."
Apparently, Sophie's way was to humiliate herself as much as possible. During lunch the next day, she sidled up to Tedros in the Evers line, only to have his boys crowd her, chomping blue mint leaves. Then she tried to get the prince alone in Surviving Fairy Tales, but Beatrix stuck to him like glue, taking every opportunity to remind him he picked her coffin.
"Tedros, can I talk to you?"
Sophie blurted finally.
"Why would he talk to you?" Beatrix said.
"Because we're friends, you buzzing gnat."
"Friends?" Tedros flared.
I've seen how you treat your friends. Use them, betray them, call them fat, call them liars. Appreciate the offer. I'll pass.
Attacking, betraying, lying. Sounds like one of our Nevers is using her rules.
Yuba beamed. Sophie was so despondent she even ate a piece of Dot's chocolate.
We'll find you a love spell somehow, said Dot.
Thanks, Dot, Sophie sobbed, mouth full.
This is amazing.
Rat droppings makes the best fudge. Sophie gagged.
Who'd you call fat, by the way?
Dot asked.
Things got worse. For a week-long challenge in henchman training and animal communication, students of both schools had to tote assigned creature sidekicks everywhere they went. At first, both schools exploded into chaos, with trolls tossing nevers out windows, stampeding satyrs stealing lunch baskets, baby dragons setting desks on fire, and animals christening the good halls with mountains of dung.
It's a tradition, an attempt at school unity, Professor Dovey said to her Evers, clothespin on her nose, however misguided and poorly organized.
Castor scowled at Nevers, flitting about the belfry, under siege by their henchmen.
Once you get your heads out of your behinds, you'll realize who's master.
And indeed, after 3 days, Hester had her baby ogre potty trained and spitballing Evers at lunch, Tedros had his wolfhound swaggering behind him, Anadil's python befriended her rats, and Beatrix's fluffy white bunny inspired such love she named it Teddy. Tedros kicked it every time he saw it. Even Agatha managed to teach her plucky ostrich how to steal candy without teachers noticing. Sophie, however, found herself with a chubby cupid named Grim. With bushy black hair, pug nose, pink wings, and eyes that changed colours depending on his moods. She knew his name was Grim because he wrote it all over Room 66 in her favourite lipstick the first day. On day two, he saw Agatha for the first time at lunch, and his eyes went from green to red. Then on day three, while Yuba taught uses of wells, he started shooting arrows at Agatha, who leapt behind the forest well just in time.
"Call that thing off!"
Tedros yelled as he deflected Grimm's arrows into the well with his training sword.
"Grim! She's my friend!"
Sophie shouted. Grim guiltily put his arrows away. On day four, he spent all of Sophie's classes grinding his teeth in the corner and clawing at the walls. Lady Lesso gave him a curious stare.
"You know, by looking at him, you'd think..."
She gazed at Sophie, then brushed the thought away.
"Never mind. Just give him a little milk and he'll be more amenable."
The milk worked on day five. On day six, Grim started shooting at Agatha again. Sophie tried everything she could to pacify him. She sang lullabies, gave him Dot's best fudge, even let him have her bed while she took the floor. But this time, nothing would stop him.
"What do I do?" Sophie cried to Lady Lesso after class.
"Some henchmen go rogue," Lady Lesso sighed. "It's a hazard of villainy. But usually it's because..."
"Because what?"
"Oh, I'm sure he'll calm down. They always do."
But by day seven, Grim started flying after Agatha during lunch, evading the grasps of students and wolves until Hester's demon finally subdued him. Agatha glared at Sophie from behind a tree.
"Maybe you remind him of someone," Sophie whimpered.
But even Hester's demon couldn't control Grim for long, and the next day his arrows came tipped with fire. After one of these singed her ear, Agatha finally had enough. Remembering Yuba's last lesson, she lured the rogue Cupid into the blue forest during lunch and hid in the deep stone well. When Grim giddily dove down the dark shaft to find her, she clubbed him with her clump and knocked him out cold.
"I thought he'd kill you," Sophie wept after they sealed the well with a boulder.
"I can take care of myself," Agatha said.
"Look,
The ball is less than 2 months away and things with Tedros are getting worse. We have to try a new...
He's my prince, Sophie stiffened, and I'll handle him myself.
Agatha didn't bother arguing. When Sophie was ready, she'd listen. While both schools went off with Castor and Uma to free their henchmen back to the Blue Forest, Sophie stole away to the Library of Vice. It took all of her will not to run out the moment she came in. Perched atop Vice's top floor, the Library of Vice was like a normal library, only after a flood, fire, and tornado had swept through. Its rusty iron bookshelves were skewed at odd angles, with thousands of fallen books all over the floor. The walls were furry green with mold, the brown carpet was moist and sticky, and the room smelled like a mix of smoke and sour milk. Behind a desk in the corner was a gelatinous toad puffing a cigar and stamping books one after one before tossing them on the floor.
"Subject of interest," he burped.
"Love spells," Sophie said, trying not to breathe.
The toad nodded to a dank shelf in the corner. There were only three books left on it. Thorns Not Roses, Why Love is a Curse, by Baron Drackle. A Never's Guide to Ending True Love, by Dr. Walter Bartoli. Foolproof Love Spells and Potions, by Glinda Gooch. Sophie threw open the third, ran down its list of spells until she found Spell 53, the True Love Heart Hex. She ripped out the page and fled before she fainted from the stench. Dot, Hester, and Anadil hunched over it during lunch.
"Once a boy is under this spell, he will instantly fall in love with you and do whatever you ask," Anadil read. "Works particularly well with eliciting proposals of marriage and invitations to balls."
"All you have to do is mix the prescribed potion into a bullet and shoot it at your true love's heart," Sophie read excitedly.
"It won't work," Hester crabbed.
"You're just mad because I found it."
Hester snatched a heap of letters from her bag.
"Dear Hester, I don't know of any love spells that work. Dear Hester, love spells are notoriously dodgy. Dear Hester, love spells are dangerous. Use a bad spell, and you can warp someone permanently."
"It's foolproof," Dot said.
"Says who? Glinda Gooch."
"I say it's worth a try if it means we don't have to talk about balls and kisses anymore,"
Anadil said, red eyes studying the recipe.
"Bat heart, lodestones, cat bone, these are all standard ingredients. Oh, we need a drop of Tedros's scent."
"How are we going to get that?" Dot said. "If a never even gets near an ever, the wolves are on us. We need an ever to do it." Agatha plopped down in a heap of pink. "What did I miss?" Sophie only got five words out.
"No. No spells, no hexes, no tricks," Agatha scolded. "It has to be true love."
"But look!" Sophie held up the page, and its painting of a prince and princess kissing at a ball. The caption, "Only authentic substitute for true love." Agatha crumpled the page and dumped it in Sophie's pail. "I don't want to hear about it again." Sophie spent the rest of lunch picking at her loaf of cheese. 2 days later, Hester felt a jab in the middle of the night. She stirred to see Sophie standing over her bed, sniffing a blue tie with a gold tea.
"Smells like heaven. I'm sure there's enough here."
For a moment, Hester looked confused. Then her cheeks swelled, ready to detonate.
"What about a villain's choir?" Sophie said. "I think that'll be my second proposal as captain."
Hester stayed up all night mixing the ingredients. Using her mother's old crockery, she blended them into a frothy pink potion, distilled the love potion into shimmering gas, and poured the gas into a heart-shaped bullet over the fireplace.
"Just hope he doesn't die," Hester growled, handing it over.
Sophie practiced her aim for 2 days before she knew she was ready.
She waited until surviving fairy tales, when Yuba and the group were climbing trees to study forest flora. When Tedros reached for a blue hornbeam branch, she saw her chance and drew the bullet into her slingshot.
"You're mine," Sophie whispered.
The pink heart shot off the sling and flew straight for the silver swan on Tedros's heart, only to turn crimson, ricochet off him like rubber, and smash back into her with a violent alien scream. The whole group spun in shock. Sophie's black robes were splashed with a giant, bloody letter F.
"For failing to abide by the rules," Yuba glowered from a tree. "No spells until after the unlocking."
Beatrix picked the broken heart bullet off the ground.
"A love spell? You tried a love spell on Tedros?"
The class burst into howls. Sophie turned to Tedros, who couldn't have looked more enraged. Next to him, Agatha had the same expression. Sophie covered her face and fled, sobs echoing through the forest.
"Every year, a rascal tries something. But even the sorriest rascal knows there's no shortcuts to love," Yuba said. "We'll start with proper spells next week, I assure you. But for now, on to ferns. How can we tell if a fern is actually a never in disguise?"
Agatha didn't follow the group to the fern field. Slouched against an oak, she gazed at the heart-shaped pieces in the grass, just as shattered as her dreams of home. Hester came back from supper to find Sophie sprawled on her bed, a puddle of tears. Sophie looked up, the red F on her robes even brighter now.
"It won't come off. I've tried everything."
Hester dumped her school bag on the floor.
"We're practicing our talents in the common room. Feel free to join."
She opened the door and paused.
"I warned you."
Sophie jumped at the slam. All night she couldn't sleep, dreading the thought of wearing the F to lunch the next day. Finally, she managed to doze off and woke to find the sun up and all her roommates gone to breakfast. Agatha was sitting on the edge of her bed, picking dead leaves out of her pink dress. "A wolf saw me this time, but I lost him in the tunnel." She glanced up at a gilded mirror on the wall. "Looks nice in here."
"Thank you for bringing it,"
Sophie rasped. "My room's happier without it." Tense silence.
"I'm sorry, Agatha."
"Sophie, I'm on your side. We have to work together if we want to get out of here alive."
"The spell was our only hope,"
Sophie said softly.
"Sophie, we can't give up. We have to get home."
Sophie stared into the mirror, eyes welling.
"What happened to me, Agatha?"
"You want the ball without winning your prince. You want your kiss without doing the work. Look, I had to clean plates after supper all week, so I read while doing it." Agatha pulled a book from her dress, "Winning Your Prince," by Emma Anemone, and started flipping to dog-eared pages. "According to this, winning true love is the ultimate challenge. In every fairy tale, it might seem like love at first sight, but there's always skill behind it."
"But I already..."
"Shut up and listen. It comes down to three things. Three things a girl has to do to win her fairy tale prince. First, you need to flaunt your strengths. Second, you need to speak through actions, not words. And third, you need to parade competing suitors. If you just do these three things and do them well, we stand a..."
Sophie raised her hand.
"What?"
"I can't flaunt anything in this potato sack. Can't act with that she-devil in my face and have no competing suitors except a boy who looks and smells like a rat. Look at me, Agatha. I have an F on my chest. My hair looks like a boy's. I have bags under my eyes. My lips are dry. And yesterday, I found a blackhead on my nose."
And how are you going to change that? Agatha snapped. Sophie bowed her head. The ugly letter cast shadows on her hands.
Tell me what to do, Aggie. I'm listening.
Show him who you are, Agatha said, softening. She gazed deep into her friend's eyes. Show him the real Sophie. Sophie saw the faith burning bright in Agatha's smile. Then, turning to the mirror, she managed a sly smile of her own. A smile that matched one of a grim little Cupid, trapped deep in darkness, waiting patiently to be let out. Chapter 17. The Empress's New Clothes. News of Sophie's failed love spell swept across both schools, and by mid-morning, everyone waited with bated breath to get a glimpse of her scarlet F. But when Sophie skipped all her morning classes, it was clear she was too ashamed to show her face.
You should have heard the things Tedros called her, Beatrix said to Evergirls at lunch.
Sitting in a heap of autumn leaves, Agatha tuned her out and looked over at Tedros and the Ever boys playing rugby, silver swans glimmering on blue-knit sweaters. Across the clearing, Nevers shunned group activities and sat mostly by themselves. Hester glanced up from spells for suffering and read Agatha's eyes with a shrug, as if Sophie's whereabouts were the least of her concerns.
Now, Teddykins, it's not her fault, Beatrix blathered loudly. The poor girl thinks she's one of us. We should feel sorry for someone so pathetic.
Her eyes bulged. Agatha saw why. Sophie sashayed into the clearing, dumpy black sack refashioned into a strapless bodice dress, F shimmering over her chest with devil-red sequins. She'd cut her blonde hair even shorter and slicked it down in a shiny bob. Her face was painted geisha white, her eyelids pink, her lips vermilion, and her glass shoes had not only been repaired, but heeled even taller, which, together with the extremely short dress, showed off long, creamy legs. From the shadows, she swanned into the sun, and light exploded off her glitter-dusted skin, bathing her in heavenly glow. Sophie strutted past Hester, who dropped her book, past Everboys, who dropped their ball, and glided right up to Hort.
"Let's do lunch," she said, sweeping him away like a hostage.
Across the field, Tedros's sword fell out of its sheath. He saw Beatrix glaring and put it back. During Surviving Fairy Tales, Sophie ignored Yuba's lecture on leaving useful trails and spent the entire class cozying up to Hort and filling her never-pail with roots and herbs from the Blue Forest.
"What are you doing?" hissed Agatha.
"Can you believe it, Aggie darling? They have beetroot, willow bark, lemonwood, and everything else I need to make my old potions and creams. Soon I'll be back to my real self."
This wasn't the real Sophie I had in mind.
"Excuse me? I'm just following your rules. Flaunt my assets, which are many, as you can see. Speak through actions. Have I said a word to Tedros? No, haven't. And, lest we forget, parade competing suitors. Do you know what it takes to survive lunch with Hort? To nuzzle that rodent every time I see Tedros looking? Eucalyptus, Agatha! I numb my nose with eucalyptus! But in the end, you were right. Listen, you miss a..."
"I was."
"You reminded me what's important."
Sophie nodded to Tedros and Everboys, ogling her across the thicket.
"It doesn't matter if you're a never, ever, or whatever. In the end, the fairest of them all wins."
She glossed her lips and gave them a smack.
"You'll see. You'll ask me to the ball before the week's up, and you'll get your precious kiss. So, no more negativity, darling. It gives me a headache. Now, where's that worthless Hort? I told him to stay by me at all times.
She swept away, leaving Agatha speechless. In the school for evil, Nevers sulked through supper, knowing they had a full night of studying ahead. With spellcasting set to begin, the teacher's tests were based less on talent now and more in tedious recall. For the next day alone, they had to memorize 80 murder schemes for Lady Lesso's first challenge, giant commands for henchmen, and the flower ground map for Seda's geography exam.
How will he correct them? Hester groused. He can't even see.
At curfew, Hester, Dot, and Anadil trudged back from the common room, piled high with books, only to find their room turned into a laboratory. Dozens of brilliant coloured potions bubbled over open flames, vials of creams, soaps, and dyes littered the shelves. A mess of dried leaves, herbs, flowers blanketed the three beds. And in the centre of it all sat Sophie, buried under sequins, ribbons and fabric, testing new concoctions on patches of skin.
"My God, she is a witch,"
Anadil gasped. Sophie held up the recipe book for good looks. "I stole it from an Ever at lunch." "Shouldn't you be studying for challenges?" Dot asked.
"Beauty is a full-time job,"
sighed Sophie, lathering herself in a bright green balm.
"And you wonder why Evers are slow," Hester said.
"Sophie is back, darlings, and she's just getting started," Sophie mooned. "Love is my challenge now."
And indeed, though Sophie placed near the bottom in all three challenges the next day, she placed first in attention. Arriving to lunch with her black uniform remoulded into a dazzling slit-back toga dress sashed with blue orchids. Her heels were a full inch taller, her face shimmering bronze, her eye shadow provocative periwinkle, her lips delicious crimson, and the glittering F on the front of her dress was now complemented by sequins on the back that read, "Is for fabulous."
"That can't be allowed," Beatrix whined to drooling boys.
But she was wearing her uniform, Sophie insisted to teachers, while usually fierce wolves looked just as awed as the boys. Dot swore one even winked at Sophie when it filled her lunch pail.
"She's making a mockery of villainy,"
Hester fumed, black eyes flaying Sophie across the clearing.
"They should lock her in the doom room permanently."
"Beast's still missing,"
Anadil yawned.
"Whatever spooked him must have been pretty bad."
The next day, Sophie flunked all her challenges again and yet somehow avoided failing out of school. Though she was clearly the worst, each time she saw a 19 pop up instead of a 20.
"I'm just too lovable to fail," she preened to mystified classmates.
During forest groups, Sophie ignored Yuba's lecture on scarecrow survival and scribbled busily in her notebook, while Agatha glowered at her black baby doll dress, pink lollipop, and sequins spelling F is for fun.
"Name something else that starts with F,"
Sophie whispered. "I'm trying to listen, and so should you, since we'll be here forever."
"F is for forever. Hmm, a bit heady. How about flirty? Or fetching?
Or futile? He hasn't even talked to you yet."
"F is for faith," Sophie said, "which I thought you had in me."
Agatha grumbled to herself, the rest of class. But Sophie almost made her a believer when she arrived the next day in a belly-bearing black halter, poofed miniskirt, spiky pixie hairdo, and heels dyed hot pink. The Everboy spent lunch goggling at her between slobbery bites of beef, and yet, even though Sophie could see Tedros sneak peeks at her legs, grit his teeth each time she passed, and sweat when she got too close, he still didn't talk to her.
"It's not enough," Agatha said, accosting her after Yuba's class. "You need better assets."
Sophie looked down at herself.
"I think my assets are quite sufficient.
deeper assets, you idiot. Something inside, like compassion or charity or kindness.
Sophie blinked.
Sometimes you make wonderful sense, Aggie. He needs to see how good I truly am.
She sees reason, Agatha exhaled. Now hurry. If he asks someone else to the ball, we'll never get home.
Agatha proposed that Sophie sneak Tedros love limericks filled with clever rhymes, or leave him secret presents that revealed depth and thought, tried and true strategies both outlined in Winning Your Prince. Sophie listened, nodding to all of this, so when Agatha arrived at lunch the next day, she expected to read a first draft of a verse or inspect a handmade gift. Instead, she arrived to find a group of 20 Nevergirls, crowded in a corner of the clearing.
"What's going on over there?" Agatha asked Hester and Anadil, both studying in tree shade.
"She said it was your idea,"
Hester sneered, eyes on her book.
"Bad idea," Anadil said. "So bad, we don't want to talk to you."
Confused, Agatha turned to the gathering. A familiar voice rang from its center.
"Fabulous, darlings, but just a little less cream."
Agatha's chest tightened. She forced her way through the swarm of nevers until she stumbled into the center and almost died from shock. Sophie sat on a tree stump, a painted wooden sign hanging from a branch above her. Lunchtime with Sophie, where beauty meets charity. Today's topic, beetroot for blemish banishment. All around her, never girls were squeezing sticky red beetroot cream onto their pimples and warts.
"Now remember, girls, just because you're ugly doesn't mean you can't be presentable," Sophie preached.
"I'm bringing my roommates tomorrow,"
Arachne whispered to green-skinned Mona. Agatha gaped, flabbergasted. Then she saw someone sneaking away.
"Dot?"
Dot turned meekly, smothered in red cream. "Oh, hello. I was just, you know, I thought I should check up on, you know, to see if, in case..."
She looked at her feet.
"Don't tell Hester."
Agatha had no idea what any of this had to do with winning Tedros's love, but when she tried to corner Sophie after, three Nevergirls shoved in front of her to ask Sophie about picking the best beets. Agatha didn't get a chance in forest groups either, because Yuba separated the Evers and Nevers.
"You must get used to seeing each other as the enemy. The first trial by tail is in 3 weeks,"
the gnome said.
"Now, for the trial, you'll need a few basic spells. There's no one way to do magic, of course. Some spells require visualization, some incantations, others hand flicks, foot taps, magic wands, numeric codes, or even partners. Yet there is one rule common to all spells."
From his pocket, he pulled a shiny silver key, the bit shaped like a swan.
"Evers, right hands, please."
Baffled Evers looked at each other and held out their hands.
"You first."
Agatha frowned as he grabbed her hand, then her second finger.
"Wait, what are you going to..."
Yuba magically plunged his swan key into Agatha's fingertip. The skin went see-through, and the swan sank past tissue, veins, blood, and attached to her bone. The gnome turned the bow, and her bone painlessly rotated a full circle. Her fingertip glowed bright orange for just a moment, then dulled as Yuba withdrew the key. Bewildered, Agatha stared at her finger as Yuba unlocked the rest of the Evers, then the Nevers, including Sophie, who barely glanced up from scribbling in her notebook.
"Magic follows feeling. That is our only rule," said the gnome when he was finished. "When your finger glows, it means you have summoned enough emotion, enough purpose, to perform a spell. You can only do magic when you have deep need and want."
Students squinted at their fingers, feeling,
coaxing with all their might, and soon fingertips started to flicker. Each person's a unique colour.
But, like a magic wand, finger glow is just a training wheel,
Yuba warned.
In the woods, you will look like a nincompoop if you light up every time you cast a spell. We will relock your glow once you show control.
He grimaced at Hort, uselessly thrusting his finger at rocks, trying to make something happen.
If ever.
The gnome turned back to the group.
In the first year, you'll learn only 3 types of spells. Water control, weather manipulation, and mogrification, both plant and animal. Today we'll begin with the last,
he said to excited twitters.
A simple visualization spell, but highly effective for escaping enemies. Now, since your clothes won't fit after you mogrify, it's easier if you're not wearing any.
The students stopped tittering.
But I suppose we'll do,
Yuba said.
Who wants to go first?
Everyone raised their hand, except 2. Agatha, who was praying now more than ever that Sophie had a plan to get home, and Sophie, who was too busy writing her next lecture, Bath is not a 4-letter word, to care about any of this. By the 3rd day on her stump, Sophie had 30 freshly bathed Nevergirls attend Just Say No to Drab.
Now, Professor Manley says a never must be ugly, that ugly means uniqueness, power, freedom. So here's my question to Professor Manley. How do you expect us to feel unique, empowered, or free in this?
She roared, waving the dumpy black robes like an enemy flag. The cheer was so loud that across the clearing, Beatrix's pen slipped and ruined her ball gown sketch. It's that mentally ill Sophie, she snapped. Still looking for a ball date, is she? Murmured Tedros, aiming his next horseshoe throw.
Worse. Now she's trying to convince the Nevers they're not losers.
Tedros missed his shot in surprise. Agatha didn't even try to see Sophie after lunch, with Never Girls mobbing her for style advice. She didn't try the next day either, when an impromptu shoe burning erupted after Sophie's lecture on Abandon All Ye Clumps, and wolves ran around whipping students back to the tower. And she certainly didn't try the next, when every Never Girl showed up for Sophie's talk on Fitness for the Unfit, except Hester and Anadil, who cornered Agatha after lunch.
This idea keeps getting more rotten,
Anadil said.
So rotten, we're not your friends anymore. Boys, balls, kisses, all your problem now,
Hester snarled, demon twitching on her neck.
As long as it doesn't mess with me winning captain, I could give a hog's behind what you two do. Got it?
The next day, Agatha hid in the tunnel of trees, waited for the sound of high heels on dead leaves, and tackled Sophie in a flying leap. What is it today? Cuticle creams? Teeth whiteners? More abdominal exercises?
If you want to talk to me, you can wait in line with everyone else, Sophie yelled. Malevolent makeovers, black is the new black, yoga for villains, do you want to die here? You said show him something deeper. Isn't this compassion? Isn't this kindness and wisdom? I'm helping those who can't help themselves.
Excuse me, Saint Teresa, but the goal here is Tedros. How is this accomplishing anything?
Accomplishment. Such a vague word. But I'd consider that an accomplishment, wouldn't you?
Agatha followed Sophie's look out the tunnel. The crowd in front of her stump was 100 Nevers deep. Only there was one hovering in back who didn't look like the rest. A golden-haired boy in a blue rugby sweater. Agatha released Sophie in shock.
You should come, Sophie called as she flounced out of the tunnel. Today's about dry, damaged hair.
In front of the stump, Arachne's one eye glowered at Tedros.
Why is Prince Prettyface here?
Yeah, back to your side, Everboy, Mona sniped, pelting him with tree mold.
More Nevergirls started to heckle him, and Tedros shrank back,
anxiously. He wasn't used to being unpopular, but just as he was booed away,
"We welcome everyone,"
Sophie admonished as she swept to her stump. Tedros came back every day that week. He told his mates he just wanted to see what Sophie was wearing, but there was more to it. With each new day, he watched her teach misshapen villains how to straighten their hunches, hold eye contact, and enunciate their words. He watched Neverboy skeptically skulk on the fringes at first, only to soon badger Sophie for advice on sleeping better, masking body odor, and managing their tempers. At first, the wolves yawned through these assemblies, but Tedros could see them listening, as more and more Nevers showed up for Sophie's lectures. Soon the villains began to debate her prescriptions at supper and over dreggy tea in common rooms. They started to sit together at lunch, defend each other in class, and stopped making jokes about their losing streak. For the first time in 200 years, evil had hope. All because of one girl. By the end of the week, Tedros had a seat in the front row.
"It's working! I can't believe it!" Agatha gushed as she walked Sophie to the tunnel of trees. "He might say he loves you. He might kiss you this week. We're going home. What's tomorrow's topic?"
"Eating your words,"
Sophie said, swishing ahead. At lunch the next day, Agatha stood in line for a basket of artichoke and olive tartines, dreaming about the hero's welcome she and Sophie would get when they returned home. Gavaldon would erect statues of them in the square, fate them in sermons, stage a musical about their lives, and teach schoolchildren about the two girls who saved them from the curse. Her mother would have 1,000 new patients, Reaper fresh trout every day, and she would have her pictures in the town scroll, and anyone who had ever dared to mock her would now grovel at her. "What a joke!" Agatha turned to Beatrix, who was watching Nevers throng around Sophie in a revealing black sari and sharp-heeled fur booties for her lecture on how to be the best at everything,
like me.
"As if she's the best," Beatrix snorted.
"I think she's the best never I've ever seen," a voice said behind her.
Beatrix whirled to Tedros.
"Is she now, Teddy? And I think it's all a big fairy tale."
Tedros followed her eyes to the ranking boards, smoldering in soft sunlight on the blue forest gates. On the Nevers board, Sophie's name hung off the bottom, pecked to holes by robins. Number 120 out of 120.
"The Empress's new clothes, to be precise," Beatrix said, and strutted away.
Tedros didn't go to see Sophie that day. Word spread that he found it sad to watch Nevers pin their hopes on the worst girl in school. The next day, Sophie showed up to a deserted stump. The wooden sign had been defaced. Lunchtime with Sophie, where beauty meets stupidity.
"I told you to pay attention," Agatha shouted as they waited in pouring rain after Yuba's class for wolves to open the gates. "Between sewing new outfits, brewing new makeup, preparing new lectures, I can't worry about class," Sophie sobbed under a black parasol. "I have my fans to think about."
"Of which you now have none," Agatha yelled. She could see Hester smirking at her from the Group 6 huddle.
"3 bottom ranks and you fail, Sophie. I don't know how you've survived this long." "They don't let me fail, no matter how bad I am. Why do you think I stopped studying?"
Agatha tried to make sense of this, but couldn't focus with her fingertip burning. Ever since Yuba unlocked it, it glowed whenever she was angry, as if raring to do a spell.
"But how did you get all those high ranks before?" she said, hiding her hand in her pocket. "That was before they made us read. I mean, do I look like I care how to poison a comb, how to pluck toad eyes, or how to say, 'May I cross your bridge' in Troll? Here I am, trying to improve these villains, and you want me to memorize the recipe for children noodle soup? Agatha,
did you know that to boil a child, you have to wrap them in parchment first? Otherwise they won't be properly cooked and might wake up in your pot. Is that what you want me to learn? How to hurt and kill? How to be a witch?
Listen, you need to win back respect through intentional evil?
No, shan't.
Then we're doomed, Agatha snapped. Sophie exhaled angrily and turned away. Suddenly her expression changed.
What in the...
She gawked at the Evers ranking board, tacked to the gates. 1. Tedros of Camelot, 71 points. 2. Beatrix of Jaunt Jolie, 84 points. 3. Rena of Pasha Dunes, 88 points. 4. Agatha of Woods Beyond, 96 points.
But... You're... You! Sophie cried.
And I do my homework, Agatha barked. I don't want to learn dove calls or practice fainting or sew handkerchiefs, but I'll do whatever it takes to get us home.
But Sophie wasn't listening. A naughty grin spread across her face. Agatha crossed her arms.
No way. First of all, teachers will catch us.
You'll love my curses homework. It's all about tricking princes, and you hate boys.
Second, your roommates will tell on you,
and you'll love my uglification homework. We're learning to scare children, and you hate children.
If Tedros finds out, we're dead.
And look at your finger. It glows when you're upset.
I can't do that. It's a fluke.
Look, it's even brighter now. You're born to be a vil...
Agatha stomped. We're not cheating.
Sophie fell silent. Wolves unlocked the Blue Forest gates, and students surged into the tunnels. Neither Sophie nor Agatha moved.
My roommates say I'm 100% evil, Sophie said softly. But you know the truth. I don't know how to be evil. Not even 1%. So please don't ask me to go against my own soul, Agatha. I can't. Her voice caught. I just can't.
She left Agatha under the umbrella. As Sophie joined the herd, the storm rinsed the sheen out of her hair, the glitter off her skin, until Agatha couldn't tell her from the other villains. Guilt flushed through her, burning her finger bright as the sun. She hadn't told Sophie the truth. She had the same idea to do Sophie's evil work and squashed it. Not because she was afraid she'd get caught. She was afraid she might like it. All 100%. That night, Sophie had nightmares. Tedros kissing goblins, Agatha crawling from a well with cupid wings, Hester's demon chasing her through sewers until the beast rose out of dark water, bloody hands snatching, and Sophie lunged past him and locked herself in the doom room. Only there was a new torturer waiting. Her father in a wolf mask. Sophie jolted awake. Her roommates were fast asleep. She sighed, nestled into her pillow, and bolted back up. There was a cockroach on her nose. She started to scream, "It's me," the roach hissed. Sophie closed her eyes. "Wake up, wake up, wake up." She opened them. It was still there.
"What's my favorite muffin?" she wheezed.
"Flourless blueberry bran," the roach spat. "Any more stupid questions?"
Sophie picked the bug off her nose. It had the same bulging eyes and sunken cheeks.
How in the world?
Mogrification. We've been learning it for 2 weeks. Meet me in the common room.
Agatha the cockroach glared back as she skittered for the door.
And bring your books.